One quick note before we begin today's interview. Our language is unedited and uncensored. As such, it may not be appropriate for all listeners. We hope you enjoy.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Very special episode today. We are joined by writer, actor, comedian, the one and only Langston Kerman. You have doubtlessly seen Langston on numerous shows and stages. I'm in particular big fan of the stand-up. He's appeared on so many things, High Maintenance, Insecure, and one of our personal favorites, longtime listeners, The Boys.
Eagle the Archer over here.
Langston recently launched a podcast that is very near and dear to our hearts called My Mama Told Me. In this show, Langston and his guests dive deep into the world of groundbreaking and, as they said, sometimes silly, sometimes serious, sometimes problematic Black conspiracy theories, often learned from mothers teaching their kids as they're growing up or other adult figures. And you can see why this immediately hit our radar. We are live in person with Langston today. Thank you so much for coming on the show and welcome.
Yeah, this is amazing. I can't wait to jump into this toxic behavior with you boys.
You know, it's funny on your show, Langston, usually there's so much fun in the maybe the first half of your episode, then you guys start to delve a little deeper into the conspiracies. We're diving right in, man. I'm sorry.
I was about to say, it's always fun before you do the research, and then you're like, oh no, this is horrible. This is a tragic choice that we made. We should have just kept telling our sillies.
Oh God, I know.
It's true. It's something we've run into. And, you know, one of the first questions I think that is going to be on the mind of a lot of our listeners is, what inspired you personally? Because there's not another show like yours out there now, right?
Yeah.
In the world with so many podcasts, this is something special and new.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, I imagine you guys felt this way, otherwise you wouldn't have started the podcast. I've always been deeply fascinated with conspiracy theory, and I have two parents who would not at any point label themselves conspiracy theorists, but do tend to follow conspiracy theory type behaviors. Like, my mom is now living in Ghana and like is fully like, I don't need the vaccine. I'm out here living a different kind of life, and like is embracing just a style of living that well aligns with a conspiracy theorist at times. And so I think I just grew up in the shit and then wanted to be able to find a little nuance in those conversations that doesn't exist. And frankly, conspiracy theory is a really white space on the surface. But all the Black people I know are conspiracy theorists of some sort. So it was like, I should just be talking to them and figure out what that is.
Sure. And it's something that we kind of contend with on the show a lot, the difference and separation between conspiracy theories and actual, you know, full bore conspiracies, of which there are too many to count. But the term conspiracy theory is often used as a way to kind of like negate the point that someone's trying to make, or like to other this notion that something is going on kind of under, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So we try to like separate the two. But I'm interested in your thoughts of conspiracy versus conspiracy theory and how you kind of look at the two.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a weird way, and I don't necessarily even always view it as a strictly racial thing, but I do think that there is a white thing where it's like, I just get to have fun with the idea of supposing that, you know, our leaders are lizards, or that, you know, 9/11 was an inside job. I just get to play in this idea. Whereas I think a lot of minorities have had to turn to conspiracy theory, or conspiracy rather, out of necessity. It truly is like looking at historical facts and going, yo, if I put this in my arm, or if I act in this way, I in theory could die from this shit. And so it's just a careful dance of both acknowledging people's like historical truth, but also being like, shut up, stupid, go do the thing that everybody's supposed to do for the well-being of society.
Oh man. So I have a conspiracy theory about the origins of your show. And I just want to put this to you, Langston. Okay. So, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but early in your stand-up career, you had a main gig that was as an educator. You were a high school English teacher,
That's
right?
That's very true, yeah.
So I'm thinking that, you know, at least according to your material, it didn't go so great. But I think a part of you really liked being an educator, being a light bringer, basically, you know, somebody who gets to show someone else, maybe a younger person, what reality is, what they need to know.
Yeah.
So I think you're bringing that like part of you to the world of conspiracies. Your thoughts?
This feels like a Charlie Rose interview without the naked walks into the shower. Yeah, no, I definitely think that's true. I think like I did really enjoy being an educator despite my many failures as an educator. And I think in some ways this is a chance to like slip in some weird education, if it can be that. I don't know. I say a lot of dumb shit for an hour at a time. And occasionally, I guess somebody, you know, walks away and feels a little lighter. But I do like that idea of like, all right, if we could laugh and then, you know, in a schoolhouse rocky kind of way, learn something at the back end of it, that's tight.
I mean, that's one of the, I think, the keys, because so many times, you know, we hear legitimate, real, multi-generational systemic problems being dismissed, right? Mm-hmm. As like, you know, there were and unfortunately are people who will say, oh, the police are getting vilified. They're not conspiring to do laundry list of things that have actually happened and they provably did. And yeah. So, and because we're talking about people who really are victimized, people's real lives, one of the approaches that you take that I think is so clever is, yes, I don't want to say trick people into learning, but if you can get people to laugh, right? If you can get people to interact with you on that emotional level, then there's a trust and they can follow us. They can follow you into, you know, the more disturbing, ugly truths that, as you said, must be acknowledged. You know, one thing we were talking about off air before we recorded was we were talking about something that I want to save this one for later. In our prior conversations in preparation for this episode, you had one thing where you said, well, whatever happened to Kony 2012, which has been a hobby horse of mine as well. You remember how that blew up and now all of a sudden it's just poof.
It was the greatest, ooh, quotation marks there, but it was the biggest viral video of all time at one point. And it was the most important thing that any Sarah McLachlan-like figure decided they were going to take on to save the world. And then we just stopped giving a fuck halfway through 2012. We didn't even make it all the way to the end of the year before we gave up on Kony.
It's so sad, though, and also just like a product of like this kind of throwaway internet culture where like everything's about like what's the next big kind of like, you know, buzzy item that can then get circulated and then kind of disappears. Like even Black Lives Matter and like all the protests and everything, that was so huge and ubiquitous and it seemed like the world was going to change, and then kind of people moved the fuck on.
A lot of people posted that black square.
Yeah,
and then forgot about it.
And you know what's it's even weirder is like, and I'm sure this connects back to the Kony 2012 of it all, is like even with Black Lives Matter, it then becomes like, appropriated by all of these companies and all these quote unquote representatives who decide that they are now going to be the face of these organizations. And so the sentiment changes. It is even like that black square was a dumb fucking moment on the internet. Sure. But it was a sincere, I think, want on a bunch of people's parts to be like, nah, this is a bad time. I feel weird. I want to at least show that I care about this thing. But then some company that, you know, Skittles posts a black square with little rainbows in it. And now we all feel confused about what this stuff means.
Not to mention that people were kind of co-opting a hashtag with that that was actually designed to, you know, tag images of police abuse. Sure. And then they were flooding that hashtag with these black squares. And that was the big kind of criticism of that whole thing. And then people were on there, hey, take off your tags, because it literally was covering up the whole point of the movement, right?
Right. And then it became a weird game of everybody being really proud of themselves for being the one that knew that they didn't, exactly, they weren't supposed to post. And mm-hmm. then a bunch of, you know, Instagram models took those squares down and put their titty pictures back up. It just became an ugly dance on the internet that, you know, to your point, all of these things, the second it sort of becomes co-opted by attention seekers, it gets dangerous and scary and messy.
Yeah, and in this case, the invisible children remain invisible.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very sad. It's very right. fucked up. We actually did a whole episode on that. It was it's messed up.
Joseph yeah. Kony is still at large. That's kicking the thing. It. Yeah, he is kicking it. He's not going to go to the International Criminal Court. He's that's the thing that keeps getting us. I mean, I think one of the things we're talking about here is that, you know, in this kind of what's sometimes glibly called a post-truth era or this age of conspiracy and QAnon and COVID, mm-hmm. I think one horrible thing we've learned is no one has lost money ever betting on people having short attention spans.
Right.
Right. And when you're exploring in your show, like, do you have moments from episodes or topics you discuss with your guest that stay with you, like after we've stopped rolling tape, you know, go home or you kick it and you think, God damn.
Yeah, there have been a few. I mean, one in particular that I think about a lot is the testing for like your genetic DNA, the genealogy, and just sort of like the discovery of, like, you know, in California now they can use that information and basically deny you a mortgage or deny you like future insurance for things, because they're basically using that predictive technology where they go, hey, you probably won't live to 50. We can't give you a 30-year mortgage because that's not going to get our thing paid back. And so it's like stuff like that where, you know, the world really is terrifying, and all it takes is for one of my family members to be curious about where we come from, and now all of a sudden I'm trapped for life because of those things.
Man, and you combine that with some of the social media tracking that can happen by these third-party companies, and yeah. then, you know, like, you imagine the social credit system that's been implemented in China that could be here really soon. Dude, it's a weird time to just be thinking how our internet footprint is going to dictate our lives and maybe even the lives of our children.
Well, and we've talked about it too, where it's like, okay, maybe I'm not scared right now of like being spied on by the man, you know, in with my webcam or whatever. But what if down the line our regime changes to something much more resembling like a totalitarian situation, and then that technology mm-hmm. is funneled directly into like a Gestapo type organization that can look at my past activism or my past speaking out about certain types of fascism or whatever it might be, something that I would think would be benign and just part of being a human being, that all of a sudden could then come back to bite me under a new regime that does not yet exist.
I mean, that's the whole thing with Zuckerberg, right? Like, he was just a dork who wanted to be able to meet pretty girls, and he didn't know how to do it. And then he created an app to try to make that happen for him. And then that sort of landslides into a guy who is now collecting all of the data that he can collect about you for the sake of just using it however he sees fit. And, you know, it didn't have to be that way, but we allowed it a certain level of reason, and now it's unreasonable in a way that we can't control.
Well, but Apple is trying to control it. Did you see that 9% of all Apple users have decided to allow tracking by other apps?
Yeah.
Only 9%. That means the rest of us said, no thanks.
Yeah,
and now Facebook, like, and a lot of these other companies that their whole business model is based on tracking what we do, it's being disrupted.
But there's an issue there. First off, I don't believe any of those official statements. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When they're saying like, oh, okay, honor system. Oh, you got us.
Yeah.
That's hogwash. But it goes like, it also goes in this thing, you know, yeah, we were like Mickey Mouse and the Sorcerer's Apprentice in Fantasia. We were all like that guy because we thought we were building something easier. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's easier to meet people online. I can look in judgment from afar at the people I didn't care for in middle school and high school.
Right.
Whose life is worse than mine? Let me get that endorphin rush. But now we're in something that you had also mentioned before, and it's something that we speculate a lot about on our show, which is that first, technology always outpaces legislation because
yes.
we don't know how to write these laws, right? And we have a lot of bad actors with their thumb on Congress when they're writing them. But more importantly, we are not the species is not evolving to a point where it can even like understand this technology, right?
Yeah,
like, what are your thoughts?
I truly do believe our brains aren't even equipped for this level of socializing, this level of sort of like taking in information. I mean, we're all old enough to remember the Encyclopedia Britannica. Those were however many books that you had to purchase. And that was the permanent information that you could learn out in the world, documented and kept in your home, presuming you had the storage space. You know what I mean? Like, and now we just have this vast, endless resource that really isn't nailing down any real opinions or understanding of what the world is. It just is creating constant contradictions and questions that, you know, it's turning us sick. It's making us weird and dangerous to each other.
We have become weird. No, it's true. And like at the very least, you could assume that the Encyclopedia Britannica was vetted and fact checked to some degree of, you know, academic rigor. Right. And now it's like we have access literally to every piece of history and information and opinion. And it's all lumped in the same record. And you can't tell the difference between one piece from the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And even if. Even if the Encyclopedia Britannica was fact-checked by a mean, bad-intentioned person, it still was making a clear choice in terms of what history is, so that we can then have a baseline so that we can start to have a real conversation. But at this point, we're literally at a state in this country where we're arguing whether or not viruses are bad. That's fucking nuts.
That's
we don't all agree that a disease is bad. What the fuck are we doing? Encyclopedia Britannica would have said it was bad.
The very least,
right?
Yes,
you're
at
right.
The very least.
And we'll pause for a word from our sponsor, then return with more from Langston Kerman. And we're back. Did you see recently this? This gave me a very gallows humor chuckle. I think I may have mentioned this, but the news just hit that there were people who were like, you know, their political identity is that they don't want to wear a mask for some reason, you know, like, don't tread on me, bro, etc. Well, now some of those folks are reportedly deciding to wear a mask to protect themselves from people who have been vaccinated, which, like, I read that on some group chat, and my only response was all caps, poetry.
They're terrified.
I mean,
like, what are you
Lord.
Talking about? Well, so you're worried that the vaccine has created something in me that you need to now protect yourself from. Dog.
Hey, look, we don't know We won't know for generations to come. No, I'm just playing.
Oh, wow.
Please. Please. Alex Jones says that the vaccine will instantly give you Alzheimer's and likely cause instant death among some members of the population.
Your doc, yeah. Will, you got to put $1 in the Alex Jones jar.
But
sorry,
fucking
man.
Dick pills and muscle milk won't. That's going to leave you.
Those are...
That's crazy. Bone broth. Bone broth.
What I would have to say, though, is... I can somewhat identify with a lot of people who feel that there's something weird with the vaccine and with the way the whole pandemic thing has just played out, because it really does feel like a movie. We've talked about it before on this episode. Nothing is happening the right way, the established way it should happen, where there's a disease and then a vaccine is being produced and it takes a long time and it gets produced, right? It feels... I don't know, something feels off. And if you have a distrust of the government already, this whole situation might break your mind a little bit.
Well, very valid distrust.
Here's where I think a lot of liberals made a very yucky mistake throughout this whole vaccine process. Is Trump spent the whole of last year being like, yeah, we're like a week out from a vaccine. We'll have a vaccine shortly. And everybody went on the internet and called him an idiot. There's no possible way that a vaccine could come this quickly. You're a buffoon. You're wrong. All these things. And then the second that he was taken out of office, or at least not even the president-elect came in, suddenly we can't wait to have that delicious vaccine poked in our arms. And it's like, nah, be honest about what this is. You didn't like that motherfucker. And so you don't trust what he's saying.
And it's comical the way he did it. But Trump came out with a statement immediately like, you're welcome for the vaccine, by the way. This was all me. And to be fair, the notion of Operation Warp Speed is a good one. They didn't just rush it out. People fundamentally misunderstand what they did. They were able to subvert some of the normal order of operations for developing a vaccine and not even skip steps, but do things concurrently as opposed to like on a timeline where things have to happen one after the other, after the other, simultaneously rather. They did it all kind of at once.
And if we were smart, we would have just said, oh, he hasn't done shit this entire time, so there's no reason to presume he's involved in the vaccine. It's just a dude who's talking on the internet or in front of a podium, and so he has nothing to do with the product. But instead, we pretended like it was his product and then flipped when it suddenly was Joe Biden's product. And that's stupid, because now we're all arguing over whether or not the product is safe.
Right. It goes into tribalism. At that point, when they're treating things that way, like I've got to say though, there's a missing piece of empathy, because social media, in a large way, rewards performativism, but it does not reward sincerity or deep thought or empathy often. And so I grew up in south of Atlanta in a majority black neighborhood, and when I was talking, when the pandemic hit, I was talking to one of my old high school buddies. He lives out in Colorado now. And I was like, hey, man, what's it like in Colorado? You know, we're locked down here in Atlanta. Nobody's really going anywhere. And then he said, oh, yeah, sorry you have to worry about that, you know? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, COVID's kind of a white people thing, and I'm going to be fine. And I was like, are you serious? We were in Boy Scouts together. You're smart. and he was like, no, well, I looked into it. You know, I quote unquote did my research, and I love this guy. I say it with affection. And he was like, and I think a lot of it's alarmist. Doesn't matter. And I think one of the reasons that he was in that mental space was because of these contradictions, these flips you're talking about. But then also he brought up a really valid point that I think a lot of people don't acknowledge, which is the systemic discrimination of the medical system. Like, if you exercise empathy, whether it's someone who's like really far right wing and they're like, they're microchipping me because I don't understand how microchips work, or they're like, hey, what about Tuskegee? What about all the horrible stuff that doctors in the medical system have done to disadvantaged populations over the course of history? Like, what do you think about that? Like, do you think that informs part of the COVID conspiracies that are circulating today?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think it's mainly the reason why, if black people tell me they're not into the vaccine, I get it. I don't agree with it, right? Like, truthfully, I just wanted to go back outside. So poke me up. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like, historically, you are making the correct choice. There's no evidence to prove that bad choices wouldn't be made with our bodies in relation to experimental or quickly made drugs that seem like they're coming faster than they should be coming and are being. A friend of mine the other day told me that like they pulled a vaccine truck in front of his apartment. That like they were like he lives in like, you know, a predominantly black neighborhood and they're trying to promote like vaccination and getting as many people vaccinated as possible. And so they sent out like one of those medical trucks and they were offering vaccines in the back of this medical truck. And when he told me, I'm like, no, don't do that shit. That sounds fucking crazy.
Don't go in there. Don't go
exactly.
in there.
Exactly. But part of it is like, you know, we all know that there's a bunch of middle class and or wealthy Republicans who are now saying they're not white people who are not going to go get the vaccine. And they're not pulling up in front of these like cul-de-sacs with vaccine trucks. You're choosing to do this in a black community. And so whether or not your intention is to put a microchip in me or kill me or give me syphilis, probably not. But whatever it's in the back of that truck, I don't trust that it's the same quality that totally. I could go get in, you know, the white Rite Aid. So I'm gonna chill.
I'm just imagining one of those trucks pulling up to one of these gated communities here in Atlanta and like the ridiculous wealthy areas just trying to get into a gated community.
Right. Oh, they don't even like ice cream trucks coming around in those communities, you know? I mean,
just the line of white people holding arms and blocking the way, they wouldn't allow it.
I just want to mention one historical precedent for this distrust that I think is interesting. J. Marion Sims, who's like considered to be the father of gynecology, experimented horribly and inhumanely on enslaved people. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff that he came up with was good. It is stuff that is still used today. So it's like you can still have that distrust, and people that have done these experiments are horrible and are dehumanizing individuals and minority populations, but the end result is still something that is used today. So it's a really interesting, weird kind of dichotomy there where it's like, how do I like take the good and throw out the bad or learn from history and not completely harbor this distrust of medical professionals on the whole?
And I think the even more fucked up on the receiving end of that, right, is for black people, that realization is not as scary as the fact that they'll still put that motherfucker's name on the stuff. Do you know what I'm saying? That like it's,
well, they only
thing,
just now pulled a statue down of him in New York, like, right, because of it only just happened. It's insane.
And it's one thing if like, okay, he discovered some stuff that we can still use today, but the fact that you still feel like you need to celebrate this dude who literally was like stabbing black women's vaginas with weird stuff just to and forcing them to do all kinds of messed up things to be able to figure out what he needed to do with a body is complicated. Look, he found some things. That's cool, but we don't have to keep like sharing his baseball card. Like he's right, like there's not an asterisk in his performance.
And there's not, like a, that's the thing, because you know, when we research this before, like the terrifying origins of like things that people agree are overall beneficial or wholesome now, we run into stuff where we still see those people described. Like, mm-hmm, they have a baseball card. Like, J. Marion Sims will tell you about the horrific, unclean things he did. But we're also going to tell you he's the father of gynecology. And it's like, does he deserve that, though?
He ain't got to be the father anymore, man. He's not the daddy. It's a Maury episode. Turns out he's not the father. Give it to somebody else.
And, you know, compounded on that, the very long and consistent history, and I'll say it, of Europeans historically getting credit for shit that other people knew for thousands of years, like Jenner and the smallpox vaccine, that like he Elvis'd that. Let's just be honest, that already existed. And and it makes me wonder, though, when we talk about this stuff, another thing that we had discussed, and I know it's a big concern, and it's almost cyclical in conspiratorial thought, is the idea of sterilization. I don't know about you, but I think all of us at one time or another, we have heard someone with utmost confidence say something like, you know, oh, hey, man, you shouldn't drink that because, mm-hmm. you know, they're putting stuff in there so that you can't have kids later. Or like, hey, you know, you shouldn't, you know, insert brand X here.
I drank a shit ton of Mountain Dew as a kid, and I maintain that that's the reason I can't touch my toes anymore. I think that's what did it. Please don't do that anymore, Matt. You gotta get off the shit.
This is actually,
man, it's a part of me now.
Well, yeah, sorry, Matt. We weren't sure how to tell you this, but Langston and Noel and I actually got together, and this is an intervention.
This
bro.
Is all a big intervention.
Well, you know, we did. It's so crazy that I'm drinking this actually, because we found out a long time ago when we were making videos that this product has a flame retardant chemical in it.
Brominated. Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And it's the stuff that makes it look citrusy. You know, it's got like that cloudy, like that cloudy look.
No, yeah. That's citrus pulp. It's pure. It's fine. Don't worry about it. No.
Do you?
I'm serious.
Go forth and be fireproof.
It's still in there. But here's
where I'm going with this, because, you know, when you hear stuff like that and you're younger, or you're a kid, and especially if it's someone who has authority in your life, mm-hmm. and they're saying, you know, I told you this, then I think it's valid and it's logical to be like, well, they were right about a bunch of other stuff too. And then later, you know, doesn't it become trippy? Like you said earlier, you know, we examine stuff, we have fun, we do some silly things, and then we, you know, this stuff is all fun until you get into the research. Isn't it trippy when you look back, you know, maybe as an adult or as a teenager, and you can research, whether that's your Encyclopedia Britannica or you're on the internet, yeah. and you say, holy shit, there were a ton of people getting sterilized.
Yeah.
And no one talks about it. Like what's your stance on that? Do you find that often these things that are treated as rumors or conspiracies might have grains of truth within them?
I think almost always. And I think that's the dangerous part about all of this stuff, is like conspiracy theorists aren't 100% wrong. They almost never are. There's like a grain of truth in almost everything that they're saying, even if it isn't truly the fact that sort of exists in their argument. It's more of like the sentiment that exists in their argument, or the motive that exists in their argument. And so like, yeah, you know, is there any historical evidence that Ronald Reagan cooked up crack in a lab and then sold it out on the streets? Absolutely not. But was his administration in a ton of ways benefiting from the fact that these drugs were out on the streets and damaging the communities they were damaging? Fuck yeah. That dude was having a party. And that needs to be part of the conversation, instead of just going, hey, you're wrong because, you know, this article proves it, or this statement never exists. It's like, that's not really what conspiracy is.
No one in Compton, no one in Chicago owns a coca plantation, right? No one has the room to grow that.
No.
How did it get here?
Matt, you had a really great note in our research doc here, just about bringing up the idea of the war on drugs and how it intersects with the prison industrial complex, which we know is a thing. We mm-hmm. know private prisons are a thing. We know individuals and corporations make shit tons of money by people being incarcerated. So how do you do that? By making things like marijuana illegal, by flooding the streets with crack cocaine and causing an epidemic in these communities that ultimately lead to people who should be counseled and treated like, you know, people with a medical condition. I mean, I'm simplifying it a little bit, but instead are incarcerated and then putting money in someone's pocket, or literally free labor force. And it's like, we don't have to get into that, but it's insane. You know, the whole thing, when you look into just scratch the surface, it's insane. And then, you know, it goes deeper than that. Langston, I'm interested in your thoughts on that whole universe of conspiracy.
Yeah, I think the hard part about it is that we all understand so little of the actual motive that creates these things. We just understand the results of those motives, right? So, and when you are the recipient of these bad things, when crack does destroy your community, or when, you know, the prison pipeline does take all of these people out of your homes and out of your neighborhoods and shit, you go, the government hates us because of this reason, or because of how we look, or because of, you know, we don't have these kinds of resources. And the reality is, it could just be some motherfuckers going like, yo, we need to build a bridge, and we need some people to build that bridge, and we can't afford to build a bridge by paying people. So we're gonna, you know, make a bunch of slaves do it, and we can't call them slaves anymore, so we'll create prisons that allow us to call them slaves. It's gross, and it's, you know, disheartening, and it's fucking awful for humanity, but it isn't always the personal attack that we make it. And we as people sort of need to be able to start to figure out exactly what the reality of these things is, and not just what it feels like to us on the surface.
It's an incredibly crucial and difficult thing to do, because of, I mean, so many of the facts that we've just named. Like, in the course of this conversation already, for every like out there conspiracy theory that we have just talked about, we have found, well, there is this one thing there's that asterisk though. And that's like, I think that's the space in where shows like My Mama Told Me and even Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, I think that's part of where we live. And it makes me wonder, when we're speculating about, you know, these systems that are in play, one of my favorite things about government conspiracy theories is there's this contradiction, there's this paradox. The same people who cannot, for the life of them, get anything right, mm-hmm. are also, like, they can't fix a fucking room, yeah. but simultaneously... they herded all the cats necessary for 9/11, yeah. and they did it in a really smart way. And maybe that's why they're so bad at everything else. And this contradiction, I think, is this contradiction comes from something that it's like a psychological cost benefit. I want to see what you think about this. Would you agree that many of the actual conspiracies that the government participates in are more the result of incompetence rather than super villainy? Because I see a lot of conspiracies that the bulk of the actual conspiracy ends up being this: someone in the government was lazy, incompetent, or they fucked up. And then for decades, mm-hmm. they tried to cover it up because they didn't want to look stupid. Like, is that out there? Have I been just like, lost in my head, or what do you
know? I think that's 100% true. I think the government and the police fuck up more than anybody gives them credit for. And I think, unfortunately, what ends up happening, and this is where the conspiracy theories become really dangerous in my mind. And again, you know, personal opinion, you guys do way more thorough research than I do. But what I will say is that what ends up happening is somebody fucks up. They spend a lot of time trying to cover it up. And then somebody gets employed that's way meaner than the people who started the thing and decides to just ice it all. You know what I mean? Just like, they'll kill off an entire population, or they'll dead the entire thing by doing a really awful, mean thing, as opposed to just continuing to fumble a football over and over again for another decade.
Let's pause for one more word from our sponsors, and then we'll return with further discussion with Langston Kerman. And we've returned.
So one thing I want to bring up is we talked about the internet, because I see what you're saying there, Langston. When the internet came around, one of the things that gave us access to everybody, if you wanted to, were Freedom of Information Act requests. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds like a weird little thing and almost just a detail, but before, if you wanted to get one of those things, you had to physically go somewhere. You had to know what you were looking for. You had to write to the government, you know, mm-hmm. a letter or something, and ask for a specific thing. Now, there are places on the internet early on where you could find this stuff. And I think a lot of those end up being the kernels of truth, the little piece at the center that is true. It's definitely, oh, this is something admitted This is something the government admitted to doing.
Yeah.
Like when we're talking about the origins of the war on drugs in America, you can see all of these little things that are objectively true. And then it's the connective tissue between those things that becomes the conspiracy theory, that becomes the scary part.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
The amount of dumbass documents that government officials have signed and like printed out and put on a man's desk and said, keep that, we're going to need it, is insane. It's like, truly, you as a human should not want this documented. You should want this hidden and burned. Why are you saving it? Why is it framed on your wall, sir?
Posterity, Langston. Posterity.
Well, sure. well, it's policy, you know. Accounting has been riding me like crazy for this.
And even with something like MK Ultra, for example, where this weird rogue agent, I mean, he wasn't really a rogue agent. He was a dude that was intended to behave in the exact psychotic way that he behaved, and mm-hmm. that he dosed, you know, normal people with LSD to try to test the effects of it. But he went way over the top with it. And then they, you know, had these, like, you know, basically CIA sanctioned brothels where he dosed, you know, Johns and sex workers with LSD and observed them in his little notebook. But in the end, what undid the whole thing was these like invoices of him trying to get paid back for all the booze and all of the like rental of the brothel property, and like even like mirrors and like sexy decor and like, you know, like velvety lampshades and shit that,
and
he, you know,
that's crazy. Look, we've all thrown a party where your friend gets way too fucked up on some shit that you bought, and
I
you
said
have to
sorry man.
You have to hold yourself accountable. But you don't have to write a letter about this shit. This is a bad memory for all of us. Don't write about it. Just move on. Pay the dude off. Apologize to his family because, you know, he's jumping out of windows and shit, and move. Just move on.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's like it goes almost to like the banality of evil, not to be too pretentious, but it always reminds me. I was so startled when I learned that the IRS doesn't care how you make money as long as they get a cut. It is technically not illegal to put high-profile drug dealer or like serial arsonist on your little tax forms as long as you like, as long as you have like an estimated, this is how much money I make burning buildings. Right. And they're like, all right, bro, 30%. And this stays between us. Like,
sure, the problem is the IRS talks with FBI, and you know,
well, that's what I'm saying. They might red flag that, but they're not going to deal with it. They might pass it along, but also they're so overwhelmed and understaffed that shit probably doesn't happen nearly as much as it should. Because
I mean, to that point, I just don't think there are that many talented evildoers out there.
Yes.
I think there are a lot of people who do evil shit, but they're not that good at it. They're just kind of like capable of like making some fucked up choices and then going with it. But there really aren't that many like truly talented people. That's why we still talk about Hitler, because he was just so fucking good at it in a way that other people since, you know, haven't been able to figure out or at least maintain on any lengthy level.
Not for lack of trying. Which
well,
is
sure. Yeah.
Even more depressing. Like that's another thing, you know, when we talk about stuff like this, and I love the point you make, like, why did you write that down, bro? Like, you had time to think about whether or not this was a good idea.
Yeah.
We also have to remember so much of that stuff got destroyed. So what we're seeing are the remnants of mm-hmm. the thing. So like we will never know. The people listening to this show now, we will never know the full extent of stuff like MK Ultra and stuff like that's why these conspiracies exist, and that's why it's so hard to quote unquote debunk one. And I don't think we should set out to debunk them. And that's one thing I appreciate that you do so well with your guest, is like you're looking at these, right? You're exploring these and you're saying, well, what do we know?
Yeah.
What are the facts? And I think that's much more helpful and rewarding than to just say, well, I think this is dumb, because we were told it was a conspiracy theory that international banks were laundering billions for drug cartels until it turned out to be absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I wonder, Oh, we got to do it. I wonder what you think about some of the things that are emerging now. Like, I would really love to hear your take on, and let me know if this is too big of a question, because I'm just going to throw this at you in a very responsible way.
Go for it. I'm excited. All right.
Okay. All right. Langston, what's going on with QAnon? Wait, what's that whole thing about? I'm messing with. But what's your take on it? Like, it came from nowhere, and now it became huge.
I think in a weird way, white people stopped being a minority within their own community, right? That, like, it used to be white minorities. Like, y'all used to have, like, separation of your own powers, that, like, everybody knew to be mean to the Polish, or everybody knew to, we didn't care for this group or that group. And then it sort of became this weird, and it's not all white people's fault. It was a lot of, like, minorities being like, the white devil, you're evil, you're bad people, all this big collection of folks. And then with that sort of became this weird hive mind that was born from that, where a lot of people felt like, okay, we all have to join forces to represent whiteness. And that's not what y'all do well. You've grown culturally in this sort of individualistic society, right? Like, black people, we've always had to go like, well, I represent blackness, I represent a larger community. But white people don't have to represent each other in that way. And I think QAnon is sort of a fucked up misunderstanding of representing a community. Like, it's a bunch of people being like, oh, this is where I can find community. This is where I can find my whiteness being articulated in a way that makes me feel heard and seen and valuable. And so you turn to the internet and you turn to these people who have secrets. And now all of a sudden you're doing just, frankly, a bunch of hood rat shit with people on the internet, because you don't know what it means to be an actual community.
Well, and that collective, idea of whiteness, quote unquote, that you're describing, it has a name. It's called white supremacy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but it's inherently bad and awful. And you're right. I never thought about it that way. But the idea of whiteness as a positive thing, that's sort of like a no-no territory, right?
Exactly.
But white supremacy obviously is a thing. And QAnon, to me, is a jumping off point of that. And to me, and I think we'd all agree, it's sort of the first example of this decentralized internet cult that is super fascinating. That, like, it's the first example of that, I think, that we've really seen, where we don't really have a cult leader. It's the idea that is the leader, and it spreads like a virus through the internet. And also, I think, was probably given a boost by the fact that everyone was stuck at home just looking for something to do, and all these, like, bored housewives and people out of work, they were just clicking around and looking for something to identify with, and just started going down these internet rabbit holes. And then there you go.
And I think even more to that point, it truly, that group is what makes me feel so certain that it is sort of like, it's white people who don't want to be white supremacists, but also do want to see being proud of white as a good thing. It's a bunch of people who do have college educations, or at least resources to be able to make other choices. But everywhere they go, they're being made to feel like a monster. And then here comes this community that doesn't make them feel that way, that makes them feel heard and seen, like they are inside on a conversation. And it's all very dumb. And, like, truly, you should go do some self-reflection instead of turning to these really bad, mean websites for a way of, creating your identity. But also, we as a whole have to stop just demonizing entire groups, because that ain't gonna fix them either. You know what I mean? Like, that's truly not how you make a bunch of suburban housewives come back to your side, by calling them mean, derogatory names every time they complain about something.
I think that is such a profound point. And I think I don't think a lot of people have thought about the evolution of QAnon in that way. And what I find two things about that. I find one thing incredibly insightful, and I find one thing profoundly hilarious. Like, when you said, now those inner boundaries that used to exist were eroding. It's I think it's tremendously insightful, because we have to remember especially in the West, in the U.S., there were these very popular gradients. Like the most bullshit example of it is like, and it's insufferable. There are so many white people who all of a sudden feel super Irish on one day of the year. They don't speak Irish. They've never been there. They have no idea where Dublin is, but by God, they're getting drunk.
Yeah.
And then there's this other thing with like, you know, it wasn't that long ago historically when there was a huge, there was like huge amounts of racism that like trickled down against like Irish people, were like actual Irish people, not the people lying at the bar on St. Patrick's Day, were like less than white, or they would say like, you can't trust the poll, and these ideas like trickled down because then those people who were getting sort of shat upon were able to say, well, at least I'm not, you know, insert person here. And Lyndon Johnson was the one who was like, if you can convince the poorest person, the poorest white person, that they're better than someone else, they will do whatever you want. And unfortunately, he was right. But here's the hilarious thing. The way you just described QAnon, it feels like a very weird superhero movie or Lord of the Rings where they all get together despite their differences. And there's some guy in Minnesota who's like, even you, my fellow pole, we're not so different.
Yeah, they're all just making this weird walk to their demise, basically. But, you know, they think they're saving the world. And it's in that way, I guess it's meant to be endearing. I don't know. It's just all... I do take a lot of solace in the fact that they've kind of, that Q kind of like just left them out to dry, and now they're just sort of wavering with these feelings and no explanation.
It's the same thing that happens with so many cults where they make some sort of doomsday prophecy and then that shit doesn't come true.
Yeah.
And then what are you left with? Feeling kind of like you were duped, or doubling down and just pushing it even further out of like some weird misplaced sense of justice? I don't even know. It's very confusing.
I'm sure you guys have seen it, but that lady, Mother God, I think that was her name.
Yes, like, Amy Carlson.
Yeah. Who she got killed. She got fucking murdered by her people now. Matt didn't know.
I think she died of cancer, and then they like kept her body, and it was like mummified.
Oh, like on some preserving shit.
Yeah, they put glitter on her eyes and stuff. It was nasty. But
sorry, Lisa, we just talked about that.
Oh, you just,
that's
okay.
The only reason.
So I'm the idiot in this. And yeah, this is why you boys are who you are.
It's a lot to take in, though. And then like that, you know, it reminded me of like, you know, Heaven's Gate kind of situation.
Yeah.
But it was even weirder than that, and I didn't fully understand what the point was. Like, it was about a comet, kind of, wasn't it, Matt? We remind everyone like what the whole central theme.
She had been reincarnated over like 5 billion years,
19 billion. So
19 billion,
predating the existence of this universe.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she was a mean alcoholic and would beat the shit out of him every time she drank at night. But I will say, and you brought up Heaven's Gate. I actually really respect the Heaven's Gate people as far as the cult is concerned. I think that they really believed what they were saying in a way that was truly endearing compared to, I think, a lot of these other people. Like Mother God lady doesn't believe she's a reincarnated version of God. She's just a drunk who wants to control people. But D and, or what was his name? Doe and T, they truly believed everything they were saying, so much so that they were willing to castrate others, castrate themselves, all for the sake of sort of being free of the, you know, the life that they were leading.
And it was consensual as well, mm-hmm. which I think is the most head trippy part.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Jim Jones?
Okay, there is a new documentary about Heaven's Gate that just came out that I really want to see. But Applewhite, the leader, he took his own life too, right? Like, I mean, they all put their money where their mouth was,
or
poison or whatever.
And that's fucking tight. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they committed that.
They committed to the bit. They followed through.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Oh man.
And we, you know, we're in a world with a species where a lot of people are out of context. This could sound very fucked up, but a lot of people are all talk.
They're non-committal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And these people truly believed in what they were saying. I don't think it's right. I certainly am not encouraging anyone to go join a cult and take their own lives. But I do think that, like, in much in the way that we were talking about Encyclopedia Britannica, commit to something. Make a choice about what the facts are for your world and live in that world, as opposed to living in this nebulous space where everything is right and everything is wrong. And now we're all just arguing over the most ridiculous stuff.
I think that's fair, but we are also just kind of describing the way cults take people in because they're looking for an answer, and cults are inherently damaging.
Well, sure,
and toxic.
I want to be a cult leader someday, and that's the whole reason I came on this podcast.
I agree, you would be good at it, man. I think you have a gift, but I want to I want to make sure you know what you're getting into, dude. Like, sure. I walked back because you're on call all the time with really clingy people until you get to figurehead status. You're like a really underpaid anesthesiologist. Right. You got to take these texts at 3 a.m. Remember what weird shit you said to them earlier. Get the nomenclature right.
That's fair.
I got your back.
Brainwashing is a full-time job. It's not the easy trip on the beach that I think we've all imagined it to be.
Well,
Start, Langston. You buy a small store, call it Books and Stuff, and then just have your messages blasting out to everybody walking on the street.
And you slowly become more stuff than books.
Yeah.
And plus, I think we can agree on air, man. If you decide you want to go through with it and commit to the time, got your back. We'll do some advertising, press the flesh for you. We'll be like, hey, we know we talk a lot about cults on this show over the years. So we finally have one we'd like to recommend. We checked it out. It's our good friend Langston. He's solid and he's got some good stuff to say.
I love the idea of there being some sort of cult advertising right after, like, Warby Parker glasses. Just you're promoting Serta mattresses and also a maniacal cult. Both of those things are available for your subscription.
Are you feeling lost? Well, don't worry.
Yeah, so this is one thing we're running into. I know that we've been talking about a lot of things really quickly. The time has flown by. There are a couple things that we just had to ask you about, because this is kind of this. I don't know about you guys, Matt and Noel. I found myself in a sort of rare situation where I heard a concept, we were talking before the show, that I had never heard, which is this. Langston, you said, what about the idea that vaping isn't bad for you? Those deaths were just early cases of COVID.
Yeah.
I had never heard that.
Oh, hell yeah. I think that was just me talking. I think I genuinely remember in 2019 that end of 2019 when everybody was like, vaping's killing people, everybody's dying from vaping. No, they're taking
popcorn lung.
Yeah, they're taking the fucking Juuls off the shelf. They're like now making commercials to tell kids, don't you dare go near a Juul, it'll kill you. And then all of a sudden it wasn't a conversation anymore, but then COVID started popping up. So I don't have any evidence of this. I don't even want to begin to present it as if I've done the research, but I will say the timing seems funky as fuck in my mind.
Well, we have something to bring to the table here, actually.
Uh-oh.
Because it was found that quite a few of those deaths, I don't believe it was everyone could be explained in this way, but quite a few of them that made news had to do with, it was weed oil or, the vapes, like weed vapes. And they're the juice. And there were a couple of groups.
Yeah. OJ killed all those people.
Hates vaping.
No. But it really was found. You can read about this in the Washington Post. It really was found that vitamin E acetate was being added to several of the mixtures, essentially. And that was actually killing people. The vitamin E acetate at levels that shouldn't be in bodies. And it was actually really damaging and appeared to kill multiple people.
Wasn't that black market vape juice, though. It wasn't like the stuff you would buy off the shelves. I mean, there's so much black market still, obviously, with weed not being legal everywhere, where you get, you know, the cartridges or whatever from someone, or maybe they make it at home. You don't know what the process is. Not that it's like super transparent or you know everything that comes from places you buy or comes from vapes you buy at dispensaries. But I believe, wasn't it traced to like local kind of like, you know, dealers that were making the stuff themselves?
Yeah, but Matt, I'm disappointed to know that COVID, big COVID, got to you, man.
Like, I know. Hey, explain look, maybe the timing. They did. Maybe they did, okay? The CDC is right over here. But hey, you know what else is right over here, you guys? In Alpharetta, there is the headquarters for the Colonial Pipeline. Have you guys been reading about any of that lately? Yeah. What's
with
going
the,
down?
With the hack, yeah.
So I tried to go out last night to get gas over here off Buford Highway, and there was no gas. So I drove to another gas station, and there was no gas. And do you guys, I mean, I'm sure we all kind of understand that feeling, or can at least empathize with that feeling, but needing or wanting to put gas in your car and it not being available is really scary.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in those times, in some of the most frightful times in this country and across the world, I think, is when there's mass panic occurring. And I just wanted to ask you guys, and Langston, you in particular, like, what do you do to both prepare your mind and your surroundings for when one day shit hits the fan from, like, it doesn't matter what it is, like, there's just chaos. What do you do?
Hoarding everything. No, I'm kidding.
I truly don't know. I think, you know, this is like a news story that's sort of being hidden underneath a lot of news stories. At least it feels that way, in that, like, they're not even sure how to fix it quite yet. So they're not trying to make as big of a deal about it as it probably is, that, like, a bunch of hackers figured out a way to cut off an entire coast of oil and gas and shit. That's insane. And so, like, I truly don't know what to do with any of these feelings. I really want a gun, and I don't have one yet. And I think I don't know what that's supposed to do, but boy, would that make me feel at least like I'm preparing for an apocalypse if I had one.
Right. Yeah. It's the uncertainty. You know, you would think that there would be more. Like, the democratization of information logically should give us more sources of information. But what we're finding, at least here in the West, is that the faucets that control the flow of knowledge are really being held by relatively few players, right?
Yeah.
So, like, we know, like, I know this sounds paranoid, but I think we're all on the same page after seeing so many things that have had a reporting spin, you know, like another thing, just to point this out for everybody listening who's hoarding gas. I understand it's easy to confuse fear with forethought, but I think a lot of these people don't know gas goes bad. Gas goes bad
spoils.
In about 3 months.
Yeah.
It's going to sit in your garage next to a pile of toilet paper, because if you were hoarding that, you probably didn't shit enough to get through all of it. And then you got these tanks that you can't sell. So now your garage just looks and smells weird. Be safe, folks.
And if you'd only listened to more podcasts and invested in that Tushy bidet, you would have been in a much better situation, you know, when the shit hit the fan, literally. I mean, wasn't that a weird, trippy situation, though? Like, that feeling of going to the grocery store and the shelves just being bare, whole aisles, like, you know, canned goods. Like, that was the closest I've ever felt to, like, oh, this is what the apocalypse is going to feel like when it starts. And maybe this is it starting. Maybe this is it starting now.
And that was the part that scared me the most, was like, it very well did feel like this was it starting. And I truly just still went and got Pop-Tarts. You know what I mean? Like, I tried to pretend as if it wasn't starting because I wanted my normalcy back. And that's fucking nuts. Like, we should have all just started pushing shelves down and fighting each other. But instead, we pretended to still have, like, you know, conventions at play. And it's,
well, that's your brain helping you out, dude. Cause I mean, our brains are remarkably adaptable, and we normalize things so quick. You know, I remember how quickly I just kind of just stopped paying attention to the, like, remain indoors signs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And like, everyone in masks all of a sudden, like, after a couple of months, it just kind of felt like the norm. And occasionally I'll do a little reality check where I'm like, wait a minute. Oh yeah, still mega weird.
And y'all wonder why people are skeptical of the government vaccine. Come on. Come on.
Just get your Pop-Tarts. Join the right cult.
Sure.
Everything will be fine. You know,
Pop-Tarts are a great choice, by the way. I mean, just it would last for a long time if you needed them. That's a good choice.
Last longer than gasoline. That's for sure.
That's a fact. They should put that in the box. What flavors you go for?
This is never a welcomed response, but I love the unfrosted strawberry. Those are my fucking favorite. Like
unfrosted?
Yeah.
Monster.
Dude, no, that's awesome, man. Wow.
Nobody ever likes it. Everybody's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. I was raised.
I like the cinnamon sugar ones, and people don't like those either. Those apparently. Bang. I think they're great. Thank you. Okay. All right.
Hell yeah. Cool.
Well, we've got like the thing is we have so many more things to talk about. It would be awesome to have you back on the show in the future.
I'd love that.
You're at all interested. Awesome. And we also want to know, like, as people are listening to the show today, they're thinking, we'll probably get letters about this. They're thinking, why didn't you talk more about, you know, this thing? Why didn't you ever bring up this thing? Well, that's because this show is not My Mama Told Me. If you want to hear those full conversations and if you want those deep dives, please do check out the show. I know we talked about it off air, but one of my favorite episodes, one that really made me think, was the most recent one, in which Langston, you and your guest Bashir ask, hey, why are all these billionaires super into getting into space now? What's going on with that? That's spooky.
We unpacked a lot of the sort of newfound space exploration that's coming from Daddy Bezos and Daddy Musk and all the other powerful people. And Bashir, who is Bashir Salahuddin, who is a very brilliant comedian and writer, theorized that there's a real possibility they're just planning to send us to space, which I had not ever considered.
Oh, damn. I thought that's the flip.
They were going themselves, but they were like, he's like, nah, fuck that. They're going to stay on Earth where the Earth will be a lot cleaner and less populated and instead send a bunch of poor idiots to space instead.
Oh, boy. One way, the first trip is free. But Matt, there is something that you wanted to bring up, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I just to give anybody listening another suggestion, I would say listen to the episode where you're talking with the Meghan Markle of background actors, Miles Gray.
Miles Gray.
and sorry, he'll get a kick out of that. It's just a great discussion, and I think it lines up a lot with if you like listening to this show. It's funny, but there's like some very serious conversation happening in the background there.
Yeah.
Just recommend that episode.
Yeah, no, I it's one of the reasons I think you guys have such a great show is the ability to dance between a healthy, fun, light conversation and some real heart-wrenching shit that maybe people should be stressing about. And that's it's not an easy dance to do, and you do it well. So I really appreciate you having me.
Oh. Dude, it's been a pleasure, man. Seriously.
Likewise.
I'll take that. Coming from Langston.
Because we have, you know, I think we've made it pretty clear to our fellow conspiracy realists that we don't just enjoy My Mama Told Me. We all believe it is an important show, and it's doing something that is only going to become increasingly important in the future. But also, that's not the only thing. That is far from the only thing you have on the horizon. Been hearing rumors about an upcoming show with HBO.
Yeah.
Called Pause with Sam Jay. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's a late night talk show hosted by my dear friend and now boss, Sam Jay. She's hilarious. She's great. And it really is just a grumpy lesbian taking on the world and really, you know, sort of planting her flag in a space that for a long time has been a bunch of sort of like white stiff voices, and she's doing the complete opposite of that. And I've been very lucky to head write the show, and it's great. And you should check it out right now on HBO. It's on HBO and HBO Max, and it's funny. And it also says some stuff that means something, but maybe not. It's a half hour television. Who cares?
That's perfect. I just want to say personally, thanks so much for coming on, Langston. It's one of the podcasts I listen to all the time. Like the stuff you did with some of the SNL folks that are on right now, like Chris Redd and Ego Wodum, like some of those conversations, man, the spaghetti thing, like I couldn't stop laughing. It's just great.
Thanks,
really,
man.
Really.
No, this was so much fun. I'm so happy that I got to be here.
And we're so happy that you're returning in the future. In the meantime, if people want to learn more about your work, both in the field of comedy, the field of podcasting, the field of acting and writing, where can they go to learn more or to follow you online now that we've talked about how dangerous social media is?
Please follow me online in all of my dangerous, dangerous tweets and Instagram posts at Langston Kerman. It's just LangstonKerman. It's my first and last name. Nobody else wanted it, so I got all the direct contact for that. And yeah, that you can follow me there, and please listen to My Mama Told Me. It comes out every Tuesdays, and now Thursdays we do mini episodes. So yeah, it's fun. It's a cool time.
Well, that was great. We're recording this after the interview, but what a fantastic time. And we looked into so many conspiratorial ideas. You know, it makes you want to go listen to My Mama Told Me.
Which you should also do, like, immediately, because it's great.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, that Ego Wodum episode had me just laughing my butt off. Do it. Go listen to that now. But yeah, hey, if you want to write to us about anything that we discussed in this episode, you want to contact us in any way, we have so many ways to do that.
So many. So many. All over the internet. You can find us at Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook and Twitter. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
Yep. And if you're someone who is not into social media, if you have valid concerns about, you know, the episodes that we did in the past on big data, and you're staying out of the fray. If you're a little more old school, no worries. You can contact us directly via our official telephone number, 1-833-STDWYTK. 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are yours. Give yourself a cool nickname. Tell us what's on your mind. Tell us if you're okay with us using your voice or nickname on air. And most importantly, do not feel like you have to censor yourself. You've got a story and you're like, how do I tell this 10-minute story in 3 minutes? Never fear. Write it out and send it to us. We read every email we get at our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.